This is the Patriots Catch 22 podcast with Evan Lazar and Alex Barth.
I'm Evan Lazar.
Evan Lazar.
Hello, everybody.
Nailed it.
Joined as always by Alex Barth.
That's a bit. That's a match.
No risk it, no risk it.
22. Here is Evan Lazar and Alex Barth.
Guys that break out early as freshmen and sophomores in college tend to be really good NFL players.
So you're telling me that the better players in college end up being better players in the pros. This is what the nerds have figured out.
The guys that...
It took them till 2024 to figure this out. Congratulations, nerds.
Can you just stop?
All right, everybody. It's Evan Lazar, Alex Barth, Patriots Catch 22. Different vibe for Patriots Catch 22 today, Barth. No studio, no live show. We're doing this old school. It feels like almost a throwback, doesn't it? That we're just recording a podcast with no live. You know, we had our glow up that we got to be in studio now and have live shows and things like that. So now it's just...
Let's not act like it's never going to be like that again. It's just 1 week.
I know, but I'm just saying, like, this show right now is like back in the day when we, you know, you just hit record on Skype or on Zoom or our lovely friends at WebEx. And then you just would do it like we're doing now. So it's just it's a little different, but it's for a good reason, and that's because I am in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, where I just got out of Drake May's pro day. I was at LSU in Baton Rouge yesterday. So we're going to talk about those two pro days. We're going to talk about pro days in general a little bit because I think there's some pushback about how much these actually matter and all those types of things. But before we do that, we do have to shout out our friends at Bud Light. Easy to drink, easy to enjoy. Bud Light, the official sponsor of the New England Patriots. And also, Alex, do you know what's on Sunday?
What is on Sunday?
Well, we're hopping towards Easter Sunday, and there's no time like the present to get party ready with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop tons of on-trend dining sets with plenty of style and storage for all of your brunching needs. And while you're here, complete the look with seasonal accents and outdoor styles made for warm weather hosting only at Bob's Discount Furniture, the official furniture store of the New England Patriots. I need to get better at these reads. It's been a while since I've done that. But where should we start? I think the first place that I want to start with before we get into the two pro days, and I'll talk about them in order. We'll start with Drake May since I'm just fresh off of seeing that, and then discuss Jaden Daniels. But pro days in general, I think the one thing that this has taught me, Barth, this little tour that I've done here, is that there's nothing more polarizing than the pre-draft process than pro days. I've never seen anything like it, how angry and how fed up people get over talking about individual throws at a pro day, or a guy, you know, today Drake May missed a couple early on in his session and all of a sudden it's the end of the world. These things just go back and forth. And I think the biggest thing that you have to emphasize with pro days is the tape is king. Nothing will ever replace the tape. The tape is the biggest part of the evaluation in terms of the football stuff. Obviously the teams get with these guys and talk about the off field and the intangibles and all that kind of stuff as well. But in terms of football, the tape is the king. But I think one thing that you get when you go to these in-person exposures is that you really see how, when we're talking about quarterbacks, how the ball flies out of a guy's hand, the control the guy has on the football, the ability to get outside the pocket and make throws like Drake May showed today, or Jaden Daniels throwing a lot of his throws in the pocket, you know, from under center, showing that he could do those types of things. You just have a different view of the velocity, the ball placement, all those types of things than watching it on TV or watching it on film. So as much as I don't want to sit here and overrate pro days or underrate pro days, I think we all need to relax a little bit in general with the pro days, but just remember, keep them in context. But more importantly, they do have, there are a purpose to them. They wouldn't do them if there was zero purpose to them. So I think that some people go off a little bit crazy with the anti-pro day stuff as well.
They still run the 40. There's not a ton of purpose in the 40. I think the purpose is the guys that want to protect their stock and work out in a more controlled environment have that option than throwing at the combine. That's what it is. It's the combine for guys that think they're above the combine. I don't think you should be sold on any player based on a pro day. Now, I do think it's fair to knock a player a bit for a bad pro day for performance because, kind of like I just said, it's the most comfortable you're ever going to be throwing a football. Shorts and t-shirt against air to your own teammates. Like, the only real variable is the pressure of it being in front of NFL evaluators. Now, that being said, I think a lot of people look at what Drake May did today and what Jane Daniels did yesterday and see that as some sort of horrible performance. Were they perfect? No. But I don't, that's not like a bad pro day. They were both fine. They were both okay. So if you're so turned off, I think, what was it, 3 balls hit the ground for Drake May? And it was 4, not including a drop for Jaden Daniels. And Daniels' session was, what was it, 50 passes, Drake May was 70. Does 4 balls hitting the ground in a 50-pass session or 3 balls hitting the ground in a 70-pass session, are you really willing to let that overrule what you saw 12, 13, 14 games of regular season competitive padded live reps football? And if you say, well, you know what, I saw what they did during the season, I didn't like them either, that's fine. Like, you can totally believe that, and you're basing it on real, actual, tangible, like, football. If you're going to let a pro day sway you that much one way or the other, you're just looking for something. You're just looking for something to talk about because it's such low-impact reps that, you know, again, neither one was perfect, but I wouldn't say either one went out and threw up all over himself either. And the same would go for J.J. McCarthy, and I'll even say people know how much I like Michael Penix, and there's people raving about his pro day and saying, oh, look at him now, he's a first-round lock. Yeah, I knew that. The pro day shouldn't convince you of that. The pro day is just about, like you said, it's really for the in-person element, and how does he, you know, how does the ball come out of his hand? You get a closer look at the footwork, things like that, but you should more or less know how you feel about the player before the pro day.
Yeah, that's totally fair. And I think the one thing that this has taught me, because the only other pro day I've ever attended in person was Boston College last year to go see Zay Flowers, and that wasn't looking at a quarterback. So it's a completely different animal when you're talking about a quarterback throwing. I think the one thing that this has taught me, and this will be for future years as well, let's say the Patriots don't get the quarterback this year, they pass on the quarterback, they make the trade down, whatever, and we're all doing this all over again in 2025, you know, Lord help us, right? I mean, I hope not. But maybe we are.
Better not.
You cannot, and I say this not to insult anybody. I'm saying this because I learned this myself. I don't think that there's any real takeaways from watching a quarterback's pro day on TV. It just doesn't translate in the same way. And I think when you watch what these scouts and what these executives and coaches that were here, and the Patriots had another huge contingent in Chapel Hill. They had 9 guys at LSU. They had 9 guys at Chapel Hill. A little swap out with Cameron Williams going to Washington for Penix's pro day with Matt Evans, who's an area or national scout, I should say, for the Patriots. So a little swap there. But the same 8 guys, you know, the coaching staff, Gerard Mayo, Alex Van Pelt, T.C. McCartney, Ben McAdoo, then the executive side, Elliot Wolf, Alonzo Highsmith, Matt Groh. So all those guys, the top brass, the top decision makers were there for both pro days. And I just feel like it doesn't, based off of the reaction, because your boy Cerrone Battle was here today too, Alex.
Yeah.
And both of us felt the same way coming off of Drake May's pro day. But then you go and read the reactions on Twitter and you read the reactions, listen to some of the reactions for people that weren't here. And I got to tell you, it's very different reactions to it. I got to be honest. And I think that you see the actual ball flying out of the guy's hand, the velocity, the footwork, the things that you were talking about. And how the scouts and the coaches are reacting to it. Right? Like, I think that's important,
right,
too.
And I would say, sorry, just to cut in addition to that, it's not like there's a level of, this is the first guy you've seen throw. You were all in Louisiana watching Jane Daniels yesterday. So, and a lot of people, I know you weren't, but a lot of these people were just in Michigan and just in USC. Like, it was the last one. So it's not like it was these people who haven't seen somebody throw a football and have nothing to compare it to. It was the last one. He was facing as much scrutiny, I think, talking about May, as any, and we'll get into Jane Daniels pro day as well, but, you know, May had as much pressure, I think, as anybody going last. And I think there was as much scrutiny on him as anybody going last. So, yeah, I put a lot more stock in the people that were there and saw it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I say that as not to come off as holier than now or anything like that. It's just something that I know.
You were there. You were there. That's better. It just is. It just seeing it in person is better. That's just a fact of it.
So just to tell the whole story, and we'll start with Drake May, and then we'll get into Jaden Daniels yesterday. To tell the whole story about Drake May, you're talking to some people afterwards, there was definitely a general consensus that he started off a little bit rough. You know, he had those two misses, airmailed a couple throws into the sideline that I think everybody's going to highlight that's anti-Drake May, that were bad. You know, really two really bad misses, throwing those deep outs. He mentioned it afterwards as well. He knew that they were, not his best throws, and he wishes he could have those back. With that being said, once he settled into the pro day, he really was starting to sling it. I mean, he was really spinning it out there. There was a couple throws that had the whole place just oohing and aahing, Alex. The 65-yard...
How close was he to the roof? Because it looked like he was getting pretty close to the roof.
He got really close to the roof on one of the, in air quotes, pro day throws, right? Where you roll out to the right and throw back to your left or vice versa. Yeah. He got a little bit close there. But the first throw, and I was standing right on the sideline for this one, down the right sideline to Tez Walker, about a 65-yard go ball that had plenty of runway. I mean, he had plenty of room to make that throw. And that was the first one that made my jaw drop. And then he hit a couple more of the movement throws. I think the one thing that really stood out that was different between Jaden Daniels' pro day and May's pro day is that May really emphasized throwing off platform, throwing on the run. I thought the level of difficulty at May's pro day was significantly higher than what I saw out of Jaden Daniels. That's not to knock Jaden Daniels and say he was terrible, but Jaden Daniels stayed on his spot for the most part and made throws. I thought Drake May really pushed the envelope. And his level of difficulty was much, much higher. I think that was on purpose. You know, these two guys coming into this, I expected Drake May to look better in this setting. You know, he has the arm talent. He has the off-platform ability. He has the gunslinger type of mentality. He's just got a bigger, stronger arm. That's just the bottom line. And I was expecting to see him be better. I thought he was better. And not, again, maybe it's a little bit of confirmation bias because I had Drake May ahead of Jaden Daniels in this process the entire time. But the throw that really put it over the top to me was the go ball that has 65 yards in the air. And I thought to myself there, Alex, if the Washington Commanders pass on Drake May at number two overall, they're crazy. They're absolutely crazy because this is a guy that can really add so much to your offense for the way that he can throw the football that I just don't necessarily see the same with Jaden Daniels. I have confidence that Jaden Daniels is a better passer than maybe some other people do, that he can stand in the pocket and make throws. We certainly saw that with his vertical passing ability at LSU, the slot phase, things like that. But when it comes to having every single club in your bag, there's absolutely no question which one has that and which one doesn't in this equation. And that's Drake May. And I thought at the end, you had right behind him was Jerod Mayo, Elliot Wolf, Adam Peter, and Dan Quinn. And I came away from this thinking, there's no way this kid's getting out of the top three. I can't see a way where both of those decision makers that were standing 10 yards behind him the entire time during this workout are going to look at what they saw today and say, no thanks. I just can't see that happening.
Or at the very least, if one of them says no thanks, some other decision maker comes up and says, fine, we'll take him. Right? And moves up. So the most interesting thing to me was that, and you kind of alluded to it, it was his quarterback's coach was the guy in the black shirt who was like simulating pressure, was running at him, and obviously knows he's not going to hit him, and it's not like real pressure, but like he's got to kind of change the arm angle and look around to see where the receiver is. And I don't think I've ever seen that at a pro day before. So I'll give him credit for that. That's a degree of difficulty. Look, guys usually want these things to be as comfortable as possible. So to add that little degree of difficulty, I'll give Drake May credit for that.
Yeah, that's exactly what I took away from it was I watched Caleb's, I watched AJ McCarthy's. Those guys, Caleb made some incredible down the field throws in his, just with the arm talent and the pure, deep ball ability there. But in general, I thought that the person that tried the hardest to flash his abilities in this was Drake May. Just the off-class stuff that I mentioned. The other thing I think really works for the Patriots in a lot of ways is some of the moving pocket throws he made. Those are two different things. And off-platform, the things that you were talking about where his QB coach is running at him and trying to simulate pressure, and he's thrown off his back foot or he's thrown off of one leg and things like that. He also did a lot of bootleg simulation as well, where he was moving the pocket and then making throws. And I couldn't help but think, when you look at a team like the Patriots that hire an Alex Van Pelt that you think are going to go into that Shanahan outside zone type of direction, where you are going to want to move the pocket a lot off those bootleg actions, and some of the throws that he was making off of those moving pockets were so AVP it hurts, right? Like, that was exactly
right.
Why I've always thought that he was a better fit in what they are envisioned doing. So it wasn't perfect, like you said. There were some struggles early on in the pro day for May, but once he settled in, I thought that the arm talent was on full display. All the throws that you could possibly think of in a pro day, he was making them. And I think a lot of people are going to come away from this once you start to hear some of the bigger Jays talking to scouts and talking to executives around the league and reporting on this pro day. You're going to hear a lot of praise for Drake May and what he was able to put together. A couple more things for May. I also thought it was interesting, watching Mayo interact with Mac Brown and Dan Quinn at the end of the pro day. I took a picture of it. I posted it on Twitter, but it felt like one of those things where Mac Brown is sitting there saying, one of you guys is going to be coaching this kid next year. I don't know which
right, who's
one
gonna
yet.
Be?
who's it going to be, but one of you guys are going to be coaching him next year. And he took a picture with the four of them. Actually, Arthur Smith and I think it was Cliff Kingsbury somehow got into the photo as well. But it was
– Well, Cliff Kingsbury makes sense.
Yeah, I think it was Cliff Kingsbury.
Or maybe Smith it was Adam get Peters. Out of there. I don't know what he's doing with the 20th overall pick in that picture, but –
Yeah, or maybe it was Adam Peters, one of the other Commanders guys. Him, Peters and Cliff Kingsbury kind of look alike a little bit. Anyways, Gerard Mayo on one side, Mac Brown in the middle, Dan Quinn on the other side was the main photo in that instance. And like I said earlier, I can't see how this guy gets out of the top three. I don't think Mac Brown thinks he's getting out of the top three either. Just along with the pro day stuff and along with the throws and stuff like that, the other thing that I think stood out was how much people were talking about how the intangible factors with Drake May, just a kid that I think a lot of people look at as a leader, a strong, intangible guy, talking about Monday through Friday instead of just talking about what's happening on the field on Saturdays, those types of things, really competitive. I guess he's a very competitive guy off the field as well, gets into a lot of pickleball battles, basketball, things like that. So somebody from the UNC coaching staff had mentioned that he felt like he probably could have made the UNC basketball team if he had
his brother played for UNC basketball.
Yeah, so if he wanted to go in that direction, he probably could have played basketball instead and would have been a pretty good basketball player. So that's what the Drake May experience was like. There was one other thing that I wanted to mention, along with Tez Walker, by the way, and I'll get to that in a second. I actually thought this was the best I've seen Tez Walker look in this pre-draft process. Rough Senior Bowl week. He ran well at the combine, which we were expecting. But today I actually was like, all right, I can see what the tools that Tez Walker brings to the table as well. And I thought he was – had a nice day today too. You obviously have the vertical speed, but the other thing I think that stands out to him is He's 6'2", he's 6'3", something like that. He's got a pretty large catch radius, and although he's got some inconsistent hands, you can see how that can be helpful on that vertical route tree to be able to throw it into his catch radius and have him go pluck the ball above his head or outside his frame. So I do wonder, you know, if you're the Commanders, if you're the Patriots, how much do you think about pairing Drake May and then coming back on day two, maybe early day three, and getting Tez Walker as well?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And that's some, you know, we've talked about that. If you take May, Walker becomes a little more valuable to you because you get him a receiver he's familiar with in camp. And that, I don't know that it makes or breaks his development, but it certainly can't hurt. So the one other thing you talked about, Drake May's competitiveness, something I liked that he went back and did. It was a 70-throw script, but he made more than 70 throws because he went back and remade the throws he missed. And that just kind of, he still missed them. And that doesn't take away from him missing them. And you'd hope that, you know, against air, he's hitting at least 50% of the time, right? But it kind of shows the competitiveness of like, no, I'm not leaving till I get this right.
Yeah, that was definitely something that Tez Walker talked about afterwards when we talked to him in the media scrum, was just that's par for the course with Drake May. That wasn't, you know, performative for the NFL scouts. Right. That's something that they do in practice every single day. When he messes up a throw or he messes up a route, Tez Walker messes up a route or whatever, they would go back and correct it in practice as well. So that's just a practice habit that extended on to the pro day. So the Patriots had a meeting with Drake May this morning. He said that obviously he's not going to get up there at the podium and say it went terribly, but right. he said it went well. And he mentioned one thing I thought was interesting about his answer was getting the Patriots potentially back to the glory days of Tom Brady. And the other thing that he mentioned as well was going over some of their playbook with Alex Van Pelt and some of the things that they're installing with this new iteration, this new coaching staff, which I thought was interesting too. That's something that oftentimes, like, the Bears right now are already doing that with Caleb Williams. He probably already has the Bears playbook at this point and is already studying up. I'm not sure that the Patriots are doing that quite yet with Drake May, but the point is that
right.
they are looking at, this is how we kind of think you fit. This is what we would do with you ideally, and walking him through those concepts and seeing how he reacts to it.
And it already means they're starting to put it together too, which is just, you know, you'd think there'd be some sort of base level being put in, but it's kind of interesting to hear that it's to the point where they can like show it to this guy and kind of go over some of the intricacies of it.
Yeah. Last thing too, I just remembered, we spoke to North Carolina's offensive coordinator, Chip Lindsey, as well.
Yep.
Off to the side, good conversation with him. And he mentioned something that I don't think is out there. I don't think I've seen this out there at all. And that is in 2022, which is for a lot of people, the better tape for Drake May is 2 years ago when he had Josh Downs. He had a little bit more NFL talent around him, and he was better in 22 than he was in 23. In 22, they were a backpedal drop back team in 22. And then in 23, Lindsey comes in, changes some things about the offense, and they became a more traditional drop back team where you see, you know, what we see on Sundays in terms of the drop back. So a lot of college teams just have the quarterback drop back, straight back, and backpedal to a spot and then start making throws. That's not necessarily how they do it in the league anymore, but if you go back and watch old clips of some of the quarterbacks in like the 70s and 80s, they still did
right.
like at the NFL level. So they don't do that anymore, not at the NFL level. So one of the things that was a big emphasis for a lot of people, or a big, I guess, knock is the best way to say it, a lot of people is Drake May's footwork. And I thought that was interesting that maybe what you found out was, well, he was learning all new footwork last year at North Carolina, and there was a transition there. You hear a lot about guys tweaking with their throwing motions or tweaking with their footwork at this time as they get ready for the NFL. But Drake May was actually doing that during the season last year in North Carolina under this new regime. So I do wonder how much of the footwork was just that, right? That he had to go through a little bit of a change at OC, and they did things a little bit differently with his dropbacks. That might explain some of the reasons why his footwork was a little bit sloppy last year.
One other question for you. Did they have any of the guys who aren't in the draft out there?
They did, and they also had a couple guys that have moved on to things like the XFL and things like that came back to the pro day to work out.
Did you get to see Bryson Nesbitt at all, the tight end?
Yes, he was there, but I don't think he participated. Thinking off the top of my head, there was one XFL receiver, and I should remember the name, but I don't, that made a few really good catches, actually. In the throwing session, made a fingertip catch that was pretty impressive, and some people were asking for him afterwards, wondering, you know, who the heck is this guy, right? That is an interesting part of it, and I know Jaden Daniels talked about that as we kind of segue into Daniels's throwing session yesterday in Baton Rouge. He talked about wanting to throw at his pro day to help improve the stock of other guys. Because he knows that the media and he knows the scouts are all going to show up for him. So it allows them to amplify some of the other guys. But
the reason I brought that up, sorry, just to cut in, the reason I brought that up is I think there's this, everybody's afraid of the Mac Jones thing where he was on a team full of superstars and, you know, Drake May wasn't. And Jaden Daniels, oh, well, look who he was throwing to. And Michael Penix, look who he was throwing to. And Bo Nix, look who he was throwing to. And I've even said this, right? Like if that's a disqualifier for you, Drake May is the only guy you're allowed to be in on because he's the last of his kind. All of these guys are going to play on super teams in the NIL era. That all being said, I don't think it was exactly Drake May and a bunch of bums out there. The offensive line was pretty bad. The offensive line was not good. He had better weapons than I think people who don't follow college football realize. Because they look at the draft, they look at the UNC draft class, and they see Tez Walker, and that's it. If you go and look at their 2025 class, Bryson Nesbitt's probably going to be the first tight end off the board. Nate McCollum, if he comes out as a wide receiver, he's good. Marion Hampton's really good pass-catching back. So I just was curious, like, if you were exposed to seeing any of those guys and maybe kind of, again, he's not throwing to Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas. He's not throwing to Odunze, McMillan, and Polk. But he wasn't exactly throwing to the 2020 Patriots either. Like, there was some talent out there. It's for people who only follow the NFL, though, it's not names you know outside of Tez Walker because they were all underclassmen. UNC was just, it was a very, very young team last year.
Yeah, I think that the other thing that people talked about with UNC, too, is they were really bummed out by the fact that they only had Tez Walker for part of the year last year. I think that was really difficult for them. They came in with a really big plan for Tez Walker to be the guy in that offense. He played in 8 games, but he was, some of those games were, you know, he was cleared on a Thursday and then thrown into a game on a Saturday type of situation. So it was, you know, that was one of the things that Lindsay said to us, was that they didn't really have the Tez Walker that they were hoping to have. They had him for some games, but it wasn't every single game. So I thought that in general, though, they spoke highly of Drake May, because I think a lot of the time when you hear these things, everybody gushes about their guys this time of year. All the coaches, all the OCs, all the people at these campuses, everybody I asked at LSU praised Jaden Daniels up and down, and everybody I asked at UNC praised Drake May up and down. That's just, they're trying to help these guys out.
Why I don't put a ton of stock in the pro day, because it's built for that specifically. It's a showcase. It's not an evaluation.
Yeah, I think that that's a fair point. I think that, you know, the other thing, and then we can transition to Daniels. I think the thing I want to do emphasize about Drake May, though, is that I talked to people that were at Caleb Williams's pro day, J.J. McCarthy's pro, all of these guys, right? All of these guys. J.J. McCarthy still has a lot of buzz and praise for how well he threw the ball at Michigan. And I wasn't there for that one. Neither of us were. So it's not that I'm trying to take away from anything that J.J. McCarthy did. I wasn't there for it. So I don't feel as though I'm as knowledgeable about it as I was these two guys. With that being said, I think the one thing that people took away, at least from the consensus top three, Caleb Daniels and Drake May, was that Drake May's level of difficulty on the throws he was making was way, way harder than what Caleb and Jaden Daniels showed scouts. I think Caleb Williams didn't probably feel the need to, And I think Jaden Daniels was trying to show I can be a traditional quarterback. It's not just about my legs. I don't have to move around. I don't have to run. I can just sit here and make throws accurately as well. And I think he did that for the most part. So, talking about Daniels, you mentioned that he had some incomplete passes, and so did Drake May. So I won't knock him for those. That was the biggest thing that I came away from it, was I was really impressed with Jaden Daniels's compact release, the smooth delivery, the efficient, just top half, above his waist. You can tell that he's got a really fluid, natural throwing motion. It doesn't really look at all like it's uncomfortable or awkward for him to throw the ball, regardless of the arm angle, regardless of the platform. And he's got a really compact, quick release. So although he doesn't have the biggest of arms, like there was clearly a difference between watching Drake May throw the ball and watching Jaden Daniels throw the ball these last 2 days, his ability to get the ball out so quickly and have that snappy release allows the ball to get on guys a little bit faster than, let's say, what the MPHs are going to tell you on a radar gun, because of that ability to just get the ball out so quickly. So I thought that was good from Daniels. I didn't, like I said, make as many throws on the move, off platform, or guys running at him like they were with Drake May today, like you mentioned earlier. But in general, I thought that he did what he needed to do and had a solid pro day as well.
Yeah, again, I think he was fine. I think he was okay. You'd like to see him do a little better than that, but I wouldn't say he, threw up all over himself or anything. I think he was all right. The big thing for him was the weigh-in, which I think he just probably hit the baseline at 210, 6'3", 210. There were only five. Hang on, I have the tweet here. I think it's only five quarterbacks last year that started at least eight games at 210 pounds. One of them will surprise you because it definitely surprised me. Hang on, I got to scroll all the way back to yesterday, past my tweet about Joe Milton throwing into the wind. There it is. So, yeah, only five weigh 210 or less. Aiden O'Connell, 6'3", 210, so that's the same size. But Aiden O'Connell looks bigger, right? He looks more built. So maybe the listing's off. I got these off from Pro Football Reference. Kyler Murray, 5'10", 207. Desmond Ridder, 6'3", 207. Bryce Young, 5'10", 204. And then this one surprised me. Kirk Cousins, 6'3", 205. I did not realize Kirk Cousins was that much of a stick. But that's a guy. I know he's coming off a torn Achilles, but that's a guy for most of his career was durable.
Yeah.
So I feel like that gives you the solid baseline. I don't know that I... Anything below that, I think you start asking some serious questions, but I think at 210, my rule of thumb, add 10 pounds for a guy just getting on an NFL weight program. So he'll come in, he'll be like 6'3", 215, 220. It'll be enough. I don't think anybody will ever call size a strength of his, but he'll be big enough.
Yeah, that's fair. I didn't look at him and see a string bean. What I saw was...
Well, let me ask you this. For a point of comparison for Patriots fans, how would you compare him to, like, Tyquan Thornton?
Definitely has more meat on the bone than Tyquan. Maybe Tyquan... We've seen some of these offseason workouts, Barth, with Tyquan. Maybe he's
right.
a totally different human being now. But based off of what we've seen from Tyquan in the past... We're not going to be talking about Jaden Daniels' wrists. We might be talking about his elbow.
All right, hang on. I know people have had that condition. It's a fluid buildup. You drain it. That's just something that happens to people, especially people who use their elbow repeatedly with force. There's no extra bone there. It's just a little fluid buildup. That's all that is. That should not matter. I know we're going to talk about it because it looks weird as hell. I had a teacher in college who had that, and it was always very weird looking to see. But there's a little fluid in there. That's all that is.
Yeah, no, there's no reason to be concerned about it. I don't think anybody is that matters, the actual teams and the scouts. But I thought looking at Jaden Daniels, and I haven't been in an NBA locker room ever before, but just some of the times that I have been closer – got in to meet NBA players or whatever. That's what his body type reminds me of, is a lean, athletic build. It's not that he is string beany. I don't think that he's really, really thin or so looks Jason like he's Tatum? Fragile. Yeah, I just think that he's a tall, lean guy. And granted, basketball is not a contact sport in the way that football is. So people are going to hear that and probably say, well, basketball players aren't going to have to get drilled in the pocket by 310-pound linemen, and that's totally fair. But I look at it more like he's probably going to be able to pack on more weight onto the frame because he carries his weight well. It's not like he looks very, very frail or very, very skinny, nor does it look like he's maxed out. He does look a little bit like a young Jason Tatum. That's probably – he's not as tall, obviously. But that, you know, those types of guys in the NBA that are come in and then three, four years later, all of a sudden they're huge, right? So
right.
That's the way I looked at Jaden Daniels' body type. I didn't look at it and say and come away from this and being like, that's a problem. Like, it's going to be a problem. Now, Brian Kelly coming out and saying that people are asking him left and right about whether or not he's going to be able to protect himself at the next level. That lets you know that it's on teams' minds. More so, I would say, based off of his playing style.
So I would say the non-sliding thing is rule, and that's nothing he was going to be able to prove at a pro day. They should have had him do a period where he just, like, slid and ran out of bounds.
Yeah, I mean, there was nothing – I didn't come into LSU's pro day with Jaden Daniels expecting him to put on an absolute show in the throwing session. It just – that's not the type of player that he is. I came into it thinking – that if he was just accurate and maybe showed some footwork from under center, that teams would be satisfied with that showing. He wasn't as accurate as I was hoping he would be, especially based off of the film where he was extremely accurate last year at LSU. But I think that he threw the ball well enough that when you add in the extra layer that's going to come in, which is his mobility, you have a real big-time explosive playmaker. And that's the thing that he kept on saying to the media afterwards and some of the TV hits I saw that he did was that he's a big play machine. That's what he is. So my biggest fear with Jaden Daniels in terms of the Patriots and just in terms of his NFL projection is nothing to do with what he showed yesterday, nothing to do with his size. My biggest fear continues to be I think the comparison that I can use, Barth, to put this in layman's terms is it's almost like he's a really good three-point shooting basketball team. And he's going to have nights where he's just going to hit 25 three-pointers and it's just a barrage of threes and you're just not going to be able to keep up on the scoreboard. But the question is, what is he going to do if a team devises a really good game plan against his legs, or he doesn't have those ball winners on the outside like Neighbors and Brian Thomas Jr. to win down the field on the vertical routes. Where are his layups in like his mid-range game right now? Because
A basketball team that shoots a lot of threes that doesn't have a plan B might have some problems down the road.
Maybe that is what I'm saying.
We'll put that conversation aside for later. But I get what you're saying in regards to Daniels.
Does that analogy make sense? That's my fear.
It does. I'm surprised to hear it coming from you. But yeah, he's going to need a better plan B. He's going to need a better left hook. Can he become more reliable in the short game and take what's given to him when defenses take away things over the top and kind of, you know, spy him more than rush him? And is he going to be able to pick a team apart in the short part of the field when that's the only option they give him, which is not, he's not the first quarterback to have that problem. We talk a lot about that with Josh, or I talk a lot about that with Josh Allen. That doesn't mean it's not a problem, but like that is, I think a lot of guys now coming out just the way the college game is played. That's something that some guys have to work on.
It's very similar to Josh Allen. That's probably the best football comparison is a team like the Bills.
Which is funny because the guy that's being comped to Josh Allen is Drake May.
Yeah, and Jaden Daniels doesn't play like Josh Allen. We're not saying that. We're just saying that the type of offense Buffalo is where it's very streaky and it's very boom or bust. That's the fear that I have with Jaden Daniels. And it's similar to, I think, moments that Justin Fields has had in the league as well, where he has these moments in these games, like the one in on Monday night in New England in 2022, where you're like, holy crap, this guy is just incredibly talented. You know, he can run around, he can throw, he's got a huge arm, like all the, he's got every tool in the toolbox that you could possibly need. But is it going to be able to be consistent and efficient and productive over 17 games versus just in spurts? And I think the one thing that you definitely also saw at LSU was how good these two receivers are that he was throwing to. So the Patriots met with Malik Nabers. That was reported, I think, on Tuesday night or Wednesday morning.
Yeah.
And I would say that that's probably more about doing due diligence for trade down scenarios. You know, there's a chance that they trade out of the pick, and maybe Malik Nabers is somebody that they're considering if they traded to 6 or 11 or something like that. Probably not going to be there at 11.
I don't think 11 for Nabers. No, that would be 6, I would think.
Right. So I would say
also, I also kind of wonder if they met with Nabers and just asked him about Jaden Daniels for an hour.
It's possible. It's definitely possible. I came away from it thinking that Nabers was the best player on the field in a pro day. So the, take that for what it's worth, right? But I was at Zay Flowers' pro day last year. This was different. This was absolutely different. And it wasn't just the athletic testing. It was the routes too. I think the one thing that really stands out with him is it's like it looks like he's running downhill because of how much momentum and just how much buildup speed he has. That I always, when I watched him on film, I loved the sudden acceleration that he has, especially after the catch. But watching him run routes the other day, the thing that really stood out to me was how his buildup speed and how he gains speed with the football in the air to track it down as well. And that's something that I think, you know, the pacing, the changing of gears, that type of stuff, that's how you separate at the next level. Brian Thomas Jr., this wasn't his showcase. He's a 6'4", 4'3" guy that's going to be a really, really good receiver at the next level. But Malik Nabers was probably the best thing I saw on this entire trip. I mean, he was that good yesterday at the pro day. He was fantastic. I have no idea what that means for the Patriots. I think the one question I would ask you, and you touched on this a little bit earlier, how much of the production of Jaden Daniels are you going to sit there and are we talking about it like we talked about Mac Jones at Alabama in 3 years? Where was, yeah, you know, there was things to like about him, but yeah, Devontae Smith, yeah, Jalen Waddle, yeah, yada, yada. Is Daniels at all falling into that trap for you as well?
I don't think, not like Mac Jones, because Mac Jones didn't rush for 1,100 yards. That, I don't care who your receivers are. You ran for 1,100 yards. I do think there's an element of, hey, he was throwing to these really great receivers. But again, you look at, like, who wasn't? Once again, outside of Drake May, who wasn't? And I think you need to look at individually what the quarterback did, independent of the guys he was throwing the ball to. Did Jaden Daniels get help? Yeah, he's probably doesn't win the Heisman without those two guys. Do I still believe he's a tremendously talented quarterback? Yes, I do. The numbers are certainly inflated a little bit. I don't think he's quite as good as maybe the LSU numbers suggest. But I say the same thing about Michael Penix. I can say the same thing about Caleb Williams. I've certainly said it about Bo Nix. So I still think, you know, he's good touch on the deep ball, right? That's before the ball gets the receiver. I think he's doing a good job of putting the ball where it needs to be. I think he does a good job of maneuvering in the pocket. Again, that's wide receivers aside. Already talked about the rushing ability. There's enough there that, like, yeah, you give him the shot to see what he can do. And also, let's not forget, again, the plan is not to draft him and put no receivers around him. The plan is to draft him, and maybe year one he doesn't have great receivers, but get him his Stephon Diggs. Get him his Tyreek Hill. Get him his Justin, Cousins has been in the league for years, but you know what I'm saying? Get him his A.J. Brown. What all these teams did for their young quarterbacks, if you can get him a guy that can allow him to make some of those throws and give him some more room for error, he's certainly the kind of guy that can capitalize on it.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of putting it with him, is that I don't think that he's a special thrower, but I will say he's a much better thrower than Lamar was coming out of college.
Oh, yeah. I don't think it's close.
in terms of mechanics, footwork, accuracy, all those types of things. Lamar, when he came out of college, was still pretty raw as a passer. You know, he had to rework his release and his throwing mechanics. He had to work on his footwork. There was a lot of elements.
Yeah. He completely reinvented himself as a passer. And that's not a knock on Lamar. It's a credit to him. I mean, he put the work in and he did all that.
Incredible.
Yeah.
And win two MVPs like that.
Right. It's not easy. Not everybody can do that.
Yeah. And Jaden Daniels is really Lamar Jackson walked so that Jaden Daniels could run, right? Because I think 10
Lamar
years
Jackson
ago,
ran so Jaden Daniels could also run. I don't think Lamar Jackson walked much.
Well, you know what I'm saying.
Yeah,
I think 10 years ago, Jaden Daniels, or you know, maybe a little bit longer than that, but 10, 15 years ago, let's call it that. Jaden Daniels, I don't think that teams would have known what to do with Jaden Daniels. I think if you look back at Atlanta, Michael Vick, before you know all the S hit the fan.
Right.
I don't think that people really knew what to do with that yet. I think that he was winning those games and he was putting up those numbers on pure talent.
Oh yeah. If Vic played in this era, forget about it.
Right. Not because they had all these schemes, that you know, the zone reads and the spread concepts and the empty concepts and all these things that allow these guys to just go out there and make plays. Now they weren't doing that with Michael Vick. They were putting Michael Vick in a pro style offense and he was just running around and making things happen. I think now, you know, Jaden Daniels is coming into this league now where he is a much better pure thrower than Lamar Jackson was and Michael Vick was, because teams have learned how to use the skill set a little bit better, especially in college. We're not maybe all the way there in the pros yet, but I'd say especially in college we are. And I think that's really encouraging if you're the team that ends up drafting him, is that he's coming into this with a much higher floor because of that. And that's why I think he's in the conversation for number two, number three overall, whereas Lamar Jackson didn't go until the end of the first round. So that's a big positive, I think, for Daniels. And I know it kind of probably sounds like I'm all in on May and kind of crapping on Daniels a little bit. And that's not my intention. I think with Daniels, you still go back to the consistency from the pocket and the ability to just win as a passer. But the thing that I'm encouraged by is that he's much further along as a passer than other archetypes in his vein in the past.
And the age, Drake May's 21, Jaden Daniels is 24. Like that's part. If Jaden Daniels was 21, he'd be the second quarterback off the board. I don't think that would even be a question. But he's 24 years old. He's further into his development physically. You know, he's just further along. When you sign him to a second contract, he's going to be 28. Drake May will be 26. That doesn't sound like a difference for NFL teams that are trying to make a long-term investment. It is. I'm not saying that's right, but that's how it's viewed. So I think that's another part of it.
Yeah, that's a fair point. What do you think about, just before we wrap here, the LSU receivers, Neighbors, Thomas, where do we think they go? I know a lot of people came out of that pro day yesterday when I was talking about those two guys and talking about Neighbors. So I fully admit, hand up, I was swooning over Neighbors yesterday. I mean, he was.
Oh boy! So do you have him over Harrison then?
No, I don't. But I understand if that's the skill set that you want. It's just like a Jaden Daniels, Drake May argument to me, where it's all about the type of guy that you want.
Right.
If you want a game-breaking speed type of player that can take any level of throw, first, second, third level throw, and turn it into an 80-yard touchdown, then that's Malik Neighbors. In a lot of ways, I've been trying to come up with the best comp for Neighbors, and it's tough. I've used Jalen Waddle in the past. I think there's some element to that. I think that there's some element.
He's bigger than that, isn't he?
He's a little bit bigger, but he's not that much bigger. He's like 6 feet 190, I think, is what he weighed in yesterday. So he did come in
I thought I saw 199.
Yeah, it's possible. But so he's not a power player. Like Jamar Chase to me is a power player for his size.
Right, he's not Chase.
Chase is much stronger and much stronger at the catch point. Is he a little Odell? I don't think he has the flashes at the catch. He doesn't have the one-handed catches and that kind of stuff, right?
Like, but that's, you know, not how even... often does he have to do that? How many opportunities did he have to do that?
I see a little Odell.
I think that's fair.
Maybe that's just LSU, another LSU guy.
No, I think Odell minus the – well, it's tough to say Odell minus the stuff at the catch point, because that's like saying somebody's Mike Vick minus the speed. Like, that's right. Right. That's the whole thing. But very explosive, very fluid mover. I've seen people compare him to Diggs. You know what my comp is for Diggs. Like, I don't think he's as well-rounded as Diggs. Odunze is my Diggs comp. I'm standing by that. It's one of my favorite comps I've come up with. Yeah, it's tough. Because it's just, he's definitely not a gadget player.
No.
But he's also not what I'd call a technically sound receiver. He's just physically dominant. Is it like more vertical Debo?
But Debo's 225 pounds.
I guess.
That's Neighbors the problem.
Plays bigger. He plays bigger than 199, though, I feel like. Maybe he doesn't play like 220.
That's the problem that I've had with comps with him, is that he does, his body type in terms of height and how he moves on the field in terms of his speed, there is a little bit of Jamar Chase there. But Jamar Chase is a really strong player.
Yeah.
Really strong in the route, at the catch point, all those types of things. You know, he does not get bumped off routes. He can play on the outside. Neighbors, I think, at the next level is a slot, like a Z slot type of player. Where
is he, like, all right, I'm just being weird now. Is he like a maxed out Kendrick Bourne?
That's not terrible either, because he's one of those guys that I think ideally, and this is why I think I started with Waddle, is because ideally you want to keep him away from contact as much as possible. I'm not putting Neighbors at the X and expecting him to have large exposures to press man and win consistently in that respect. He'll run by some people because he's just that fast, but that's not the best way to use him. The best way to use him is in the slot, off the line of scrimmage, move him all around, bring him in motion, like all those types of things. That's the way I would use him. So in that respect, I kind of see a little bit of Odell. Like, Odell was never a pure X to me either. He was always one of those guys too that was
– That's true.
They always were moving him around and things. But the other thing is, you know, with Odell that really got me thinking this was Odell could take that slant 80 yards to the house in his prime.
Right.
Odell had that after the catch ability that Neighbors has, which I think is one of his best traits. I don't know how the Patriots get their hands on either of these guys. If Daniels is the pick, it would obviously be amazing to pair him with either BTJ or Malik Neighbors. Neighbors is going to be long off the board. I think Neighbors' floor is probably – I mean, I look at, you know, a team like the Chargers, a team like the Giants, if they don't go quarterback, like that, he could go at 6 to the Giants easily. Easily. So
right.
There's no way they could do that. BTJ – maybe he falls to like the early 20s just because of how deep this class is at wide receiver, all the quarterbacks that are going to go at the top of the draft. Maybe that's possible to trade up from 34 to the early 20s, but I just don't see realistically how they get both of those guys. They pair it, right? They draft Jaden Daniels and then pair him with one of his receivers.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's probably Thomas.
All right, a couple last things here. That was the pro day portion. I do want to talk a little bit. When you go to these things, it's a little bit like training camp, Barth, where you start to look around and try to observe things. What are the guys do? What is Jerod Mayo? Who's he talking to? Who's Elliot right. Wolf talking to? You know, those types of things. The one guy that I think stood out to me from both days that we need to figure out some more information on. We're both, we try to dabble in journalism every once in a while and not just be nerds about everything, right? So Alonzo Highsmith and his role in all of this, I think, is going to be really fascinating moving forward. Alonzo Highsmith was the most popular guy at the two pro days over the last 2 days. Not a single other person talked to more people inside LSU's practice facility or North Carolina's practice facility than Alonzo Highsmith. He works the room. And on top of that, he just came from the college game. He has a lot of understanding of these guys. It wasn't just, oh, I'm going to go talk to this coach. I'm going to go talk to that GM. I'm going to go talk to this guy. He was talking to the players. These student athletes know him from the recruiting trail, I'm assuming.
Right. Yeah, I think, or maybe some of their parents remember him playing. And I mean, he's third overall pick. It's not like he was a nobody in the NFL.
Absolutely. He obviously has a relationship with a lot of these people on the college circuit. And there was that report that was out there that he was also going to help Elliott Wolf tweak the grading system and things like that as well. I think we're looking at a situation where Alonzo Highsmith is going to have a really, really big role in college scouting for the Patriots moving forward if this regime sticks. I have one other thought on that, but I just want to get your reaction to Alonzo Highsmith.
I like it. I said when they hired him, I like his background. I think he's worked with a lot of good teams. I like that he's a former player. I like that he has that insight. I think he's a good pairing for guys like Elliott Wolf and Matt Groh, who have really just spent their entire career in the scouting room. Highsmith has been at so many different levels. He's worked in college. He's worked in the pros. He played all of that. So I would hope he's involved. I think when Ian Rappaport gave that report a month ago about that Elliott Wolf was going to have final say, I think I remember him saying Highsmith was essentially the number three in the front office as Wolf one, Groh two, Highsmith three. So you'd think that guy would be pretty influential, but given where he comes from, he was just at Miami, it makes sense that most of that influence would be on the amateur scouting side.
Yeah, you could just tell that guy's got a personality. Just everybody seemed to really enjoy having talks with him. He was talking to Jaden Daniels for a little bit. It seemed like they knew each other from somewhere along the line, or maybe it's just one of those things, and I think there's a little bit of this with Jerod Mayo too, where you were a formal player, so these guys just have respect for you for the fact that you were in the league, and Alonzo Highsmith, the third overall pick, Jerod Mayo, high first-round pick himself. So a lot of these guys, I think, are also a little bit starstruck to meet these people. It was the same way with Bill for different reasons, obviously. But it's I think that's the angle that they're coming at it now is, oh, snap, you know, that's Alonzo Highsmith. You know, he was great, all-time great college player, third overall pick. That's Jerod Mayo, top 10 pick, Super Bowl champion. You know, I think there's stuff like that going on as well that it's encouraging from a scouting standpoint for the Patriots, or just from a, you know, the fact that this new regime and all that type of stuff. They're taking a lot of heat, Barth. I'm trying to, you know, tell people what's going on when you see these guys in the wild. The other thing I wanted to mention from this point of view, you mentioned Matt Groh's name. I don't know what Matt Groh's, and this is pure speculation. I have no inside information. I don't know what Matt Groh's role in this is after the draft. It seemed to me like, you know, this is Elliott Wolf, Highsmith, I think Patrick Stewart, who I don't think a lot of people know very well, is a senior personnel executive with the Patriots, is pretty involved. I would just be interested to see when we get from a month from now and the draft is over and the dust is settled, what is Matt Groh's future with the New England Patriots?
Maybe he's just on to the next draft. And maybe they kept him because he had done all the legwork during the season under Belichick. He was the head of the personnel department, and that's why he's still here. He could absolutely be gone after the draft, but he just might be their lead draft guy now. And he's going to do all the work, you know, up through the college football playoff and then kind of hand it over to the guys upstairs once the offseason really kicks into gear. That's what a director of college scouting would do. That was his old job before he got promoted. And we kind of think him and Elliott Wolf flipped roles. So maybe he just goes back to that. Maybe he just takes the demotion.
It's possible. I don't know where else he would go. There's no real Belichick people for him to go latch on with. Maybe Dable in New York is the only other option, but that's a Buffalo run operation with Joe Schoen. I don't know where else.
Wait, isn't his brother a wide receivers coach somewhere?
Yes. I don't know.
I'm looking. Hang on. I'm looking.
He was in Indy for a while, right?
Oh, his brother's actually with the Giants.
So maybe that's the connection. You know, maybe he goes and gets a high-ranking role under Schoen and Dable with the Giants.
Well, you said
what'd you say?
It doesn't necessarily need to be high-ranking.
No, it doesn't. But he's not going to go back and be an area scout. You know, he's going to be...
Right. But I don't think he's getting hired as an assistant GM.
No, my guess is that he would probably go back to a scouting role of director of college scouting, something along those lines. Back to college and back to where he started, which I think is good for him in a lot of ways, honestly. I don't think that Matt Groh, and I've enjoyed getting to talk to Matt Groh the couple times that we've been able to, and I think he's a nice guy and everything, but I think the one thing that stood out to me is that he is maybe not meant to be a public-facing figure in an organization. Certainly your station has gotten plenty of run out of the, if you want to draft fast guys stuff. I just wonder if maybe Elliot Wolf was born to handle that type of stuff a little bit better. Just my thoughts on it. I think Matt Groh is at his best when he is on the scouting trail, when he's in the trenches, and when he's doing that type of stuff, like he was at the Senior Bowl earlier this year, like he was the last couple of days at these pro days. I think that's where Matt Groh's sweet spot is, and there's nothing wrong with that. It's like a great assistant coach, like Dante Scarnecchia. Right. I'm not saying he's going to be Dante Scarnecchia, but you understand, like not everybody's meant to be a head coach. Some people are just meant to be coordinators. Some people are just meant to be really good assistants, really good position coaches. Maybe Matt Groh is just a really good offensive coordinator in the scouting world.
Yeah, but again, is there a chance he just drops back and does that here?
Definitely possible. I do think it's got to be, and again, this is just coming from me, it's got to be awkward. It would be awkward for anybody just in a normal type of career if you get jumped by your number two. That's an awkward situation. I think
you acknowledge you were maybe accelerated early.
That's possible. Any final thoughts on these pro days? I know you're maybe a little bit more out on the pro days, I think, because I wish you could have been here with me. I feel like maybe you would have felt a little bit different.
I've never been a big pro day guy. Yeah, if I was there, I'd probably play it up a little more. But you know what? To your point, like, I think you got to be there to really experience it. And again, shorts and a t-shirt against air. Johnny Manziel had the right idea. At least he threw in pads. I'll give Drake May some credit. He had his coach simulating a rush on a couple throws. I'll give Joe Milton credit. He threw outside. I really don't put a ton of stock in pro days one way or the other. I think they're probably the most used. Not that they're entirely useless, but I think if, you know, the showcase games, the combine, pro days, pre-draft visits, those are the big landmark periods of the pre-draft process. I think pro days ranks well towards the bottom in terms of what you get out of them.
Fair enough. I agree with you. And I think that the next big steps in this process, the 30 visits, the private workouts, the Patriots, right, I'm sure will have those with all the quarterbacks, whether they're here, I should say, in Foxborough, or they're...
Well, Mayo said they plan on having May, Daniels, and McCarthy visit. Although you can't do on-field work at the top 30, right? It's only medical workout and meetings.
Right. I believe that's true. I always get this one confused. I'm not going to lie to you. They definitely will have private throwing sessions with these guys.
Yeah.
Whether those are on campus or in Foxborough, I'm not really sure about those details. But that's really where it's more important, I would say, than these pro days, and that's why they're behind closed doors. Because what will happen is that AVP will get with these guys. He'll put together a script of their plays,
right,
and their types of throws and their types of reads, and then go ahead and ask those guys to run through, all right, we're running this concept. I just taught you this concept in the classroom. Now we're bringing it out on the field. Show me that you remember the progression. Show me that you remember where you're going with the ball.
Right.
That those things, I think, are what the teams are emphasizing as the most important thing. These pro days, I agree with you. They're a little bit of a spectacle. It was really fun to go to them and see it. I thought it was well worth it from our standpoint, from a content standpoint, but that's really what it is. It's a way to get these programs some limelight, which I think is funny, because does LSU need any more of a spotlight as like a blue blood football program? But
well, they're all competing for recruits.
Yeah, for whatever reason, it works for these schools to have these recruits. And today at UNC, I didn't notice it as much at LSU, but I'm sure it happened at LSU today or yesterday as well. Today at UNC, there was a ton of alumni. Michael Carter was there.
Rumors like that at LSU yesterday too.
Yeah, there was rumors that
everywhere,
Sam Howell.
Everywhere
was
it is.
Yeah, Sam Howell, who's really good friends with Drake May, I believe was in the building as well here at UNC. So we'll see. But the bottom line, the takeaway, I can wrap it up on this. I think all three of these quarterbacks are in play for them, Barth. I think J.J. McCarthy is in play for them as well. And I think it's going to be really a secret to the finish, as it always is. But the Commanders control it. But I would say that the biggest takeaway I have is that Drake May, Jaden Daniels are not alone. I know that both of us may not agree with that, but J.J. McCarthy is somebody that is in the conversation here as well.
I mean, it sounds like he is. I'll say he is because it's our job to say what we think is going to happen, not what we want to happen, but I still don't fully understand why he is.
I'm with you. All right, that does it for this episode. I got to say, Alex, I'm like a little bit out of practice with doing this like this.
It definitely feels weird.
I feel like I was stumbling through that whole thing. So hopefully we got all the information across that we wanted to. And next week we'll be back in studio and we'll do it the new way, the better way, I should say, because man, we need the listeners, we need the calls, we need the emails. It was just us just talking against the wall. I didn't like that as much. So I'm excited to get back into studio. But before we sign off, a couple more shout outs. Hey, Patriots fans, if you want to see Toyota's best offers, including those not on CTV, not seen on TV, go to buyatoyota.com. It's Toyota's official website for deals from the official vehicle of the New England Patriots. Toyota, let's go places, like going back to Boston, which I'll be doing tomorrow. I drove a RAV4 in Baton Rouge, Barth. Really nice. Nice car.
Yeah, my brother has one of those.
Yeah, it wasn't bad. It was a new one. I liked it. The other shout out we got to do is our friends at DraftKings. Whether you're in the game or betting on the game, you'll need a game plan. DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the New England Patriots, provides you with everything you need to build your personal betting game plan. So you can get it on all the action while practicing safe bets. Visit DraftKings.com/responsible-gaming to learn more about all the safe betting tools DraftKings has to offer. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or gamblinghelplinema.org. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. GameSenseMA.com. Physically present in Massachusetts. See DraftKings.com/responsible-gaming for details and state-specific responsible gambling resource. Barth, a lot of talk on campus today about the Tar Heels basketball team. Big Sweet 16 game tonight for them. That was the conversation going around. So DraftKings.
Well, are you going to be there for the game? Are you flying out tonight or tomorrow?
Tomorrow. So I guess technically I will be. You
got to go to you got to go out somewhere and experience it. That's a big time college sports environment. I just got so jealous. You please promise me for me, you'll go somewhere and actually UNC in a Sweet 16 game, you're on campus. That's going to be electric. Get out there and enjoy it.
I will. I'll try to get out there and enjoy it. I have been up since 4:30 this morning to get here on time. So I don't know how much longer I'm going to last, and that might be part of the reason why I couldn't think straight for this entire podcast.
You got 4 hours till the game. Take a nap.
All right, I'll take a nap. All right. Well, I'll see you. I'll see you back in Foxborough next week, Alex. Yeah. And we'll see. We'll talk to you guys, and we'll get back in studio next Thursday, same time as usual. But until then, signing off for Alex Barth, I'm Evan Lazar. Thanks for listening, everybody, and we'll see you guys next week.
Thank you for downloading this podcast. Subscribe on Apple, Google Play, and everywhere else you listen. Like the show? Please rate and review us. Listener comments and ratings help keep us high in the podcast rankings so new listeners can find us. Be sure to check patriots.com for more news and more podcasts.
The world's original podcast.